Okay, gentlemen, we're on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Okay. And let's just summarize the points that we made yesterday. We had two approaches to interpreting the Mishnah. The Mishnah on the one hand says Didi Mominus Bishlosha. And then as what seems to be a separate bava, a separate paragraph, it says Gzelos v'chavolos b'shlosha. And the first approach to this Mishnah is the approach of Rabbi Avo, adding the Mahem, which means that the Mishnah is qualifying and it's saying that Dini Mamis b'shlosha only applies to the cases of Gzelos v'chavolos. And the reason for that is that in the parasha of Elohim, where it says Elohim three times, that's the parasha of Gzelos v'chavolos. Hence, in the case of Hodos and Halvos, we don't require three judges. Right? We don't require three judges. The only thing is that the Mishnah seems to be assuming that we don't require three Mumchim, correct? Because the requirement of Mumchim is derived from Elohim. But yet the Mishnah would seem to imply that in other cases maybe we do require three judges. So here, at this point, the Gemara says, Li'olam kasovere for parshios ksivkan. Again, I'm not telling you where this is because I'm just using it to stimulate my memory to review the sugya that we did yesterday, just to start with that review. If we're holding Erev Parashios Ksiv, then the Gemara maintains that just like in the case of Gzelus and Chavos, you require three Mumchim, then we should require three Mumchim in the cases of Hodos and Halvos as well. So then why does the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Avo, use the mute of Mahem? And the answer is that Enochinami, we really do require Mumchim in the case of Hodos, in the case of Halvos, but we apply the principle of Shalotinol Delis Bifnei Lovin. And Shalotinol Delis Bifnei Lovin means that who's going to lend money if he thinks that the only way he'll get his money back, he has to have recourse to get a Bezdin, and the Bezdin has to be a Bezdin Shel Smuchin. That's very complicated to find a Bezdin Shel Smuchin. So a person will be inhibited to extend a loan because he has no security. He's not going to find the Bezdin Shel Smuchin to get his money back. Hence, the Rabbanim made a takana, and they lifted the requirement of Smuchim, and they left it with the requirement of three judges. So therefore, when it says Shehen, what it means is that the three judges on a qualitative level, namely of Mumchim, that's the requirement that's limited to Gzelos and Chavolos. As far as other Dinei Momenos are concerned, namely Halvos and Odos, there you're going to require three judges, and that's based on Erev Parshios Ksiv, but we will eliminate the requirement of Smuchim, of Mumchim, because of the principle of Kadesh Lo Tinol Delos V'Nei Lov. And the Gemara points out that in fact Rabbi Chanina apply that principle Shalotinol Delis Bifnei Lovin to lower the standards of interrogation as far as Edom is concerned and alleviate the requirement of Drisha V'Hakira. Fine. So that's Rabbi Avo's approach to the Mishnah. Then we have another approach, and that is the approach of Rava. Rava's approach is to take Dini Mominus Bishlosha as one separate paragraph and Dine Gzelos v'chavolos b'shlosh is a separate paragraph without adding the Shehen, so we don't need the mute. Fine. Then finally, the end of the sugya of yesterday was Rav Acha b'Reid Rav Ika, and he was of the opinion that we don't accept Erev Parshas Ksiv, therefore the requirement of three judges, which is formulated Elohim times three in the parasha of Gzelos, does not apply to Odos. And one judge is sufficient. And that's why the Torah says, B'tzedek tishpot in Lashon Yachid. v'tzedek tishpot am yisecha. And the Gemara points out that the nafkamina is going to be a great nafkamina. What happens if two judges went ahead and they issued a ruling in a monetary case? Do we recognize and validate that ruling or do we not? According to the Shita Rav Acha, midoraisa, there's no requirement of more than one judge. So we have one judge, we even have two judges. The Rabbanan made a takana to guarantee that we don't get the Yoshvei Krados on the Bezdin. We should require three judges. But in a case where they adjudicated the case with two judges, we'll accept that. According to Rava, accepting the principle of Erev Parashios Ksiv Kan, which means that the Torah itself requires three judges, and no less than three judges will do. Therefore, even b'di'eved, post facto, if they issued a ruling based on the decision of two judges, that ruling is totally invalid. So let's see, Rabosai, where we can start the new sugya for today. And we're counting up from the bottom of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph to the two dots, which are, I think, seven lines up from the bottom. Nezek v'chatzi nezek. So the Mishnah went out of its way to tell me that in the case of nezek, let's say, for example, a person physically assaults someone else, then amongst the various chiyuvim and the compensation he has to pay, one of them is called nezek. And then chatzi nezek is going to be the case of a shor tam. So the Gemara asks the following question. Nezek hainu chavolos. We said that the case of chavola is where you injure a person and you cause him a hefsed because of the injury to his body. Well, that's exactly what nezek is all about. Nezek means that a person attacks his friend and he has to pay nezek. Now, it could be that the word nezek is much more all-inclusive. In other words, it goes beyond chovel. Chovel refers specifically to chavola begufo shel chavera. He injures his body, his friend's body. But in the case of nezek, it could include even if he injures his possessions. He breaks his table, for example. That's also included under the word nezek. So what does the Gemara mean when it says nezek hainu chavolos? And the answer is that chavola is a general term that includes any hefsed that is caused by a direct action on a physical material possession of a person, as opposed to odos v'halvos, where you're only dealing with a debt, with something abstract, but not with a physical object. So if I cause you a hefsed in your physical object, you can call it by one of two names. You can call it chavola if I injure your physical body. You can call it nezek if I injure your possessions. But in both cases, the common denominator is there's a hefsek caused by the loss of an object or a limb of someone's body, something tangible, as opposed to halvos and odos, which are abstract, which refer to a debt. So the Gemara actually concedes that this question is absolutely correct. Nezek hainu chavolos. The Gemara doesn't deny that. So why then did the Mishnah mention nezek if it already mentioned chavolos? Mishum de koboy lemisnei chatzi nezek. This is one of those ID detani kind of, we've mentioned many times that for symmetrical purposes, sometimes the Mishnah will add a couple of extra words which are not really necessary. So here too, when we want to have a contrast between a shor tam and a shor muad, so we call a shor muad is called nezek, and a shor tam is called chatzi nezek. So mishum de kaboy lemisnei chatzi nezek, since he wants to mention the case of a shor tam, which is only chatzi nezek, therefore he mentions nezek. It's like in Hebrew we call it a tzemed milim. Tzemed milim, when you have twin words, this and this, like you have erison and nesuin. So these two words go together. Chatzi nezek and nezek. It's tani nami nezek sholem, he mentions nezek sholem. But he really doesn't need nezek sholem, because nezek sholem is really to be classified under chavolos. It's an absolute direct hezek to a physical object, and that's called either nezek or chavol.
And nezek chesi has a different thing.
For chatzi nezek, there he's not paying as a compensation for the loss of his tomato patch.
Okay.
But it's a different kind of compensation, which the Gemara is going to explain. Let's call it knat.
Okay.
So the Gemara says, Chatzi nezik nami hainu chavolos. Even in the case of a shartam, when he pays 50% of the hezek, he's also paying because of the physical damage. And as my shor gored your cow or your sheep, so again, I'm paying you for the replacement of your object. So that's also chavolos. Why then did the Mishnah have to add chatzi nezek? So it's a whole chain over here. We didn't understand why you have to add nezek sholem, because nezek sholem really is chavolos. Ella, what? You added nezek sholem because you want to introduce chatzi nezek. Well, chatzi nezek is also chavolos. So the Gemara answers, katani mamono katani knasa. So let's just write down our translations. I don't know what you'll find in the English translations of the words mamona and knasa. Mamona means compensation. Knasa means a penalty. The penalty is not a reflection of compensation. If I was compensating you for your loss, I would pay you nezek sholem, the full compensation. But rather, nezek is full compensation, but chatzi nezek is only a knas. Now, does the fact that chatzi nezek is a knas, does that mean that therefore I could lower the standards of a Beis Din, or should I actually raise the standards and the regulations of a Beis Din? I don't know if anybody has a knee-jerk response to that, but it seems in halacha that knas requires a higher level of a Beis Din. And this is the principle which we're going to get to later on in this parak, called Ein Donin Knossos B'Bavel. Now the word Bavel here is indicating of Chutzlarts. Anything outside the land is Ein Donin Knossos. We don't have the same level of a Beis Din in Chutzlarts that we have in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is really the extension of the Sanhedrin. And anywhere within the bounds of Eretz Yisrael, the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, the Beis Din has a special status. That's called the Beis Din of Eretz Yisrael. And the Beis Din of Eretz Yisrael is empowered, is authorized to be mechayev knas, but a Beis Din Chutz Laaretz cannot be mechayev knas. That's called Ein Donin Knossos B'Bavel. I'm not writing it on the board, Don, because we're going to get to it later on. I'm really just giving you a little bit of a preview of what's going to come around the bend. So the Gemara now wants to know, why does it say chatzi nezek? And the answer is chatzi nezek, even though it is a type of chavola, but the payment is a totally qualitatively different kind of a payment with its own dinim. It's qualitatively different in a conceptual sense that a knas is not compensation, it's a penalty. For example, Rabbo said, what would be a classic case of a knas that you can think of? Okay, that's good. Yeah, what else?
Monetary knas?
Well, this is too sophisticated for me, Rabbi. So I'm talking about a ganav. How much does a ganav pay?
Kefil.
That would be like a child's case of a knas. Meaning, the principal, which is called keren, that's compensation. You know, he stole my cow. Let him pay me for the value of the cow if he doesn't have the cow to return to me. On the other hand, to pay another 100% of the value of the cow, that's clearly a penalty. That's called a knas. Again, you know, Asher mentions Onus of Afat as a knas of Chamishim Shekel. And Joseph, you mentioned what case? Chomet Shavuot of Pesach? Ah, well, that's not a penalty in a sense of paying money to someone. But in the... What do you say? But there are many, many cases of knossos. For example, you have something called Hezek Sheino Nika, where you pay a knas. Many different cases of knas. And one of them is Chatzi Nezek. Now, let's take a moment and contemplate this concept of chatzi nezek. Is it really a knas? There are really two ways of understanding chatzi nezek. One way of understanding chatzi nezek is that the owner of the shor should really be potter, completely potter and ganzen. He shouldn't have to pay a penny. And the Torah imposed the penalty. But there's an entirely different way of understanding the parasha of chatzi nezek in the case of a shor tam. You could say that he should really be paying the entire compensation, but we're going to go easy on him. Why are we going to go easy on him? Because he didn't have three warnings. And therefore, we're going to say, you know, he was naively thinking that his shor is a nice, quiet shor. You know, it's a nice ox. He calls it by its first name. He gives it a name. And he didn't anticipate that the shor would go out and belligerently damage someone, attack someone. So, you know what? We're going to be a little bit lenient. So it means that, on the contrary, our rachmanus is going to lift half the nezek. The original half of the nezek is not a knas. The original half of the nezek is the payment and the compensation. It really should have been a full compensation. That's what he deserves. But we're going to go easy on it. We're going to give him a prize. In Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, they call it a chupar. That's an Arabic word. But, you know, we'll give him a prize and we'll say, you know what? Instead of paying 100%, we'll let you off. And all you have to pay is 50%. So the Gemara says the following: I can understand your answer that the reason why the Mishnah was compelled to add chatzi nezek, may that make sense? Lamandiyom, according to the view that palgud nizka knasa, that when the Torah imposed a penalty of paying 50% of the nezek in the case of a shartam, it was a knas. El Lamandiyom, according to the other opinion that says palgud nizka mamona, that when he pays half the nezek, that is a compensation. It's not a knas. Ma'ikal amemar. Then why did the Mishnah feel compelled to repeat what we already know? If chatzi nezek is a mamon, it's a kind of chiyuv mamon, then it comes under the gzelos v'chavolos. Now, what is this machlokus as to whether or not chatzi nezek is a knas or chatzi nezek is mamon? So the Gemara elsewhere, Masechet Bava Kama, presents the following machlokus. One opinion says Stam Shvarim Becheskas Shimur Kaimi, that your average ox is guarded, meaning it's naturally guarded. Guarded. You follow what I mean by protected? You know, it's not belligerent. Your average ox is not belligerent. It's innocent until proven guilty, and we can only prove it guilty after the third negicha. The other man, the other says no. Stam Shvarim La Becheskas Shimur Kaimi. You know, there are other animals that are not usually belligerent, a goat, a cow, a cat. I don't know about a cat. But let's say a goat, a sheep, right? Sheep are shepsula, they're very quiet, they're very inactive, and they're not belligerent. But an ox is belligerent by its very nature. So therefore, if the ox is belligerent, that's called stam shvarim lav v'cheskas shimur kaimi. That means you have to protect it, and you have to guard it. And therefore you should be paying full compensation if as a result of your negligence the ox went out and gored somebody. According to the other view, Stam Shvarim Becheskas Shimur Kaimi, that the average ox by its very nature is not belligerent, it's shamur, it's guarded. It's passive and not belligerent. And therefore we don't want to impose any penalty on you. You're like an onus in this case. You're these circumstances beyond your control. And therefore you shouldn't pay anything. But the Torah imposed the knas because the Torah wants to make sure that on the outside chance that your shor happens to be the shor that's labaches kashimur kaimi, that's a very active and belligerent shor, you better watch out, because you're going to suffer the repercussions of paying chatzi nezek if you don't take care to watch your shor. So this is the machlokus, whether or not palgud niska knasa or palgud niska mamona. Now, the difference between the two is the following. In the case of knas, bezdin plays the major role, and therefore we're going to up the ante on the kind of bezdin. It's got to be a bezdin in the land of Israel. It can't be a bezdin in chutz laretz. It'll have to be smuchin. And on the other hand, that leads to a kula, a leniency, because if you're going to jack up the requirements and regulations of a bezdin for a knas, what that means is that Bezdin is creating the knas, and until Bezdin does so, it's not a knas. Do you follow what I'm saying? In the case of Mamona, Bezdin is clarifying with evidence exactly what took place. And then Mamela, if he's guilty as accused, he has to pay. Not so in the case of a knas. In the case of a knas, Bezdin goes way beyond just clarifying the evidence of what took place. Bezdin is creating a brand new chiyuv. A new chiyuv. Now, if anyone here learned Masechet Makis on Daf Hey, the famous sugya called Eidim Zomimim, that's the sugya about the nature of knas, where the knas is just a where the knas is a chiv for the action that was done, as we penalize you for your so-called criminal action, or no, knas is a new payment that emerges and is generated by the Beis Din. What happened before that moment is totally irrelevant, so to speak. I don't mean it's irrelevant. Obviously, what happened is what caused the knas. But the knas doesn't exist until after Beis Din establishes the knas. So again, as I said before, whereas mamon is the ma'is hamachayev, is the hezek itself, and Beis Din is only there to clarify the facts on the ground and then issue a ruling. In the case of knas, Beis Din is the sole authority to create that knas, and the chiyuv to pay that knas only emerges with and at the point of the horas Beis Din. The horas Beis Din, their decision, will create the knas. So now the Gemara wants to know if we can come up with an alternative explanation as to why the Mishnah felt compelled to add Chatzi Nezek. You're telling me the Mishnah had to add Chatzi Nezek because Chatzi Nezek in the case of a Shartam is a Knas. I'm of the opinion that Chatzi Nezek is Mamona, that Stam Shvarim Lavacheskes Shimur Kaimi, and therefore the Torah was only lenient and merciful and allowed him to get away with paying 50% of the compensation, but he's paying it as compensation. And therefore comes on the Chavolos. So why then did the Mishnah feel compelled to add Chatzi Nezek? Elo says the Gemara, I did the kaboy le misne tashlume kefel, v'tashlume arba v'chamisha dimamon. She'en, we're here, we're turning to Gimel Abay, she'en v'shtal mi b'roshu, is tonanami Chatzi Nezek dimamon, she'en v'shtal b'roshu. And now we have to understand, what does it mean, eino mishtalim b'rosh? Okay. Now, the Gemara quotes the cases of Kefel and Dalet Vehe. These are all cases of Gneva, of theft. Now, why is it that the Mishnah goes out of its way to tell you that in order to adjudicate a case of Kefel and Tashlumi Arav Chamisha, you must have a Beis Din of Shlosha? I mean, that should be included on the Chavolos. So the Gemara answers, because the Mishnah wanted to break new ground and introduce a category which is called Mamon She'eino Mishtalim Barosh. Now what does this mean, Eino Mishtalim Barosh, and how can we take this from the case of Kefel and apply it to the case of Chatzi Nezek? And the answer is that we have something called Keren. Keren means exactly what you should pay in compensation. If I'm compensating you for your loss, what was your loss? And that's called Mishtali Mirosh. Mishtali Mirosh means Karen, that you're paying exactly what he lost. You cause him a loss, then you have to pay for that loss and replace that loss. But Eino Mishtali Mirosh means that you are not paying Karen. In other words, you're not paying a price which is commensurate to his loss. Certainly if you're paying Kefel or Dal Vehe, that's not commensurate to his loss. Not only that, Chatzi Nezek is not
commensurate.
What do you say?
Commensurate.
Oh, it's not commensurate to his loss, because his loss was a full keren. So again, what the Gemara is now doing is it's comparing the cases where it's beyond keren, it's above keren, and the case where it's below keren, as opposed to the case where he pays keren. If he's paying keren, that's included under chavolos. But the Mishnah now wants to add cases where he's not paying keren. Why isn't he paying Karen? Well, in the case of Ganav and Gada Tovach and Mochar, etc., he's paying a Knas. Why doesn't he pay Karen in the case of Shartam? He gets away with Chatzi Nezek. The Torah allows him, you know, alleviates his onus, his burden, and his punishment, and says you only have to pay half of the Karen. But the common denominator is that in both cases, the penalty and the payment is not Karen. And that's included in the Mishnah. The Mishnah wants to go ahead and say the following. We have Chavolos. Chavolos means when you pay Karen. You destroyed his table. How much is his table worth on the market? That's what you're going to pay. And then we have two other cases where Eino Mishtali Barosh. You're not paying the Karen, but rather you're paying either more than the Karen or less than the Karen. And that includes, number one, Ganov who pays Kefel. Number two, a Shartam that pays Chatzi Nezek. In both cases, we want to know that you have to have a bezdin shel shlosha, and that's where the Gemara says at the end, if he aydi the kaboy lemisnei chatzi nezek toni nami nezek. Again, the Gemara reiterates what it said before, that we really didn't have to mention nezek because nezek pays keren, and it's mishtalim barosh. We only mentioned nezek by the by because we put it together with chatzi nezek. But why do we mention chatzi nezek? Because that's mamon she'ena mishtalim barosh, even if it's not a knas, but it's not keren. Obviously, it's something different about the nature of this payment. We're not going to be go so far as to say it's a knas, but we will say that it's not a mishtal mirosh. It's not a it doesn't fit into the classic pattern of tashlumin and zikin. Now we get to the Gemara of Shlosha. Where is Shlosha? How do we derive Shlosha? The magic number of Shlosha. In fact, the Mishnah is going to tell me how you get the 23 judges, right? The whole derivation of Eda, if you remember that. But in the case of Shlosha, the Mishnah doesn't bother telling me how do we derive this halacha that the court has to be comprised of three or no less than three judges. The Tanur Rabbanan we learned in the Braisa. The Pasuk says in the Parsha of Shomer Ganov. What do I mean by Shomer Ganov? A Shomer is not a Ganov. A Shomer is given over something to watch. He's like a custodian. And he'll return the object after a certain period of time. That's not a Ganov. But the answer is that this Shomer decided that he wants to take the object for himself. So what does he tell the owner? He gives the mafkid a whole song and dance. And he says, you know what? Somebody broke into the corral and stole your sheep. Meanwhile, that's a fabrication. The truth is that he, the shomer, has that sheep locked up somewhere and he took it for himself. So that's called a toein tainas ganov bipikot. And let's write that on the board because that's going to come up over and over again. And this is real heavy bava kama. And is it okay if I write in green so that you'll be able to see it from a distance? And that's called Toein Tainas Ganov Bipikadon. Alright, so this is the word Pikadon. That's a dollar, not a tzadi. What's a Pikadon? I don't know how to translate that into English. It's an object that was deposited.
A security deposit.
I don't want to use the word security deposit. Security deposit just sort of implies that, you know, put some money in my bank in case I need to.
A deposit.
Let's call it just a deposit. Okay, so I deposit an object in your possession. You're the shomer. You're the custodian, and you have to return the object. Now, if you don't return the object, then we have to ask the following question. Was it a pshia? Did you not supply? Were you negligent in supplying the shmira, the protection that you had to supply? And that breaks up into four categories. Or, it's a lot worse than that. You deliberately took the object for yourself. You know, you were watching someone's gold watch, and then all of a sudden, you know, it occurred to you, hey, you know what? I got this gold watch here. I really could use that gold watch. So you decide to take it for yourself. So what do? You come forward as a shomer, you say to Bezdin, you know what? This object was stolen. Somebody broke in and he took the watch. Now, a shomer is patur, okay? A shomer is patur in a case of onus. What does that mean? If you give me an animal to watch and lightning strikes and hits the animal and the animal drops dead, I don't have to pay you for that. Again, we have to see that Shoel is a separate category. But the general rule, without, you know, for our purposes, without exception, is that a shomer is chai for pshia. Pshia means negligence, but not for onus. The exception to the rule is a ganav. A ganav, once he steals something, he's chayav for anything that happens. If lightning strikes and the animal dies, he will pay back the owner. Now there is one case in which a shomer is typhonis, and that's when he becomes a god. Once the shomer crosses the red line and he decides he's taking it for himself, and I'll give you two scenarios in which that occurs, he becomes a god. What are the two scenarios? So the first scenario is called Sholeach Yad B'Pikadon, right? Sholeach Yad B'Pikadon. Now I'll give you the superficial translation of this term, and then I'll give you the real Lamdish translation. On a superficial level, it means that the shomer used the object. He's not allowed to touch the object. So if I give you a horse, you're not allowed to ride the horse. So the moment you ride the horse, you become a sholeach yad, because that act of riding the horse is considered gneva. And at this point in time, you become chai for onsim, even in the case of onus. Because now your entire focal, you know, your definition and framework of chiyuv changes. Before it was a shomer who's not chai for onsim. Now you're a ganav, and a ganav is chai for onsim. What makes you into a ganav? Shlichus yad v'pikon. Should I go over that one more time? We got it. I don't know what that means when you shook your head. Okay? It's either A or B, so you have to shake your head for one of the two. A means, should I go over it? Or B, you understood it.
Both. I understand.
Okay, now I'm really confused.
I understand.
Okay. Right? So when does a shomer change his hat and he becomes a ganav? When sholeach yad b'pikadon, he uses the object for his own purposes, that makes him into a ganav, hence he's chai for oms. But then there's another scenario, and that's called toim tainas ganav b'pikadon. That the clever shomer, who's very shrewd and he wants to take this object for himself, you know what he does? He comes into Beis Din and he tells the Beis Din, he tells his litigant who's the plaintiff who's trying to get money out of him. He says, you know what? Somebody stole your horse. Somebody stole your cow. I couldn't have prevented it. I did whatever I could. So if he's toei tainas ganav, the Gemara Masechta Bava Kama has a special yalfusa to derive the conclusion that he becomes a ganav. And once again, the nafkamina is he's chayav for onsim. So in this parasha,
I'm not quite sure I understand the difference between it, because in both cases he took it. In one case,
right? Excellent question. In one case he took it physically, and I told you I'd give you more.
So in one case he took it and he hid it. So he's definitely here at Ganef, right? Because he intends to take it. In the other case, he just used it. So he intends to give it back, but he actually used it when he shouldn't have used it.
The first case,
I don't know. I would say the following, Don. In the first case, the Sholeach Yad V'Pikadon, what he does is he lifts up the object. When he lifts up the object for the purpose of using it, he becomes a Gant.
Right.
Because every case of Gneva means removing it from someone's reshuts. Now, if you give me your cow to watch, then as long as I don't touch the cow, so to speak, as I don't take it away from where it has to be, okay, for my own purposes, then it's in your rishus, even though physically it's in my rishus. That's, again, I don't want to confuse you, but that's called Yad Shomer Ki Yad Balabais.
We're taking the milk, you know, at the cow, but I'm supposed to give the milk to you.
Right.
I'm just charged with...
Let's leave out milk. Let's take a watch. So, okay, I give you a watch, and now the watch is here. Mm-hmm. We'll put it down at X. Okay. That X is mine. Even though it's yours, it's mine. Why? Because you're watching it on my behalf. So that's considered my reshus. When you become a ganav, when you lift it up and relocate it for the purpose of taking it for yourself. Again, you're not relocating it because you want to put the watch in a safe place with the shade or something out of the sun, but you're lifting up the watch because you want to take it for yourself. Once you lift up the watch for your own purposes, then you've taken it out of the reshus of the ganav. Not so in the case of Toin Tanis ganav. In the case of Toin Tanis ganav, it could be that the sheep was locked up in a certain place from the get-go, from the moment it was deposited in his hands. But when he comes into Beis Din and he says, I'm not going to give you back your sheep because your sheep was stolen, he's really lying through his teeth. I'm going to prove that with two witnesses. That fabrication of the truth, that taina, that claim, countering the claim of the litigant who owns the animal, it makes him into a gun. And then it's a whole different concept. Okay. Now, this parsha is in Shmos, it's in Parshas Mishpatim, and there the Torah says V'nikrav, take a look inside now. V'nikrav balabais el ha-Elohim. And I say Elohim because we're referring to the Dayanim, the judges. So the Brisa says the following. That because the Torah, in the case of a shomer, who is towing Tainas Ganov, the Torah says, V'nikra balabais el Elohim. What it means is that the balabais means the owner of this watch, is going to sue the shomer, because the shomer says it was stolen, so he's going to sue him and accuse him of lying. So they both have to go El Elohim. They have to show up in front of the Bezdin. Elohim means the Dayan, the judge. Harekan Echad, meaning that's the first time in this parasha that the Torah used the word Elohim. Now we go on in the parasha, and in the very next verse it says, Ad Elohim Yavo Dvar Shneim. Harekan Shneim. A second time the Torah mentions the judge. And then in the very end of that pasuk it says, Asher Yashin Elohim. Elohim is the third time that it mentions the judge. Harekan Shlosha. And that teaches me, Dibri Rabbi Yoshua, that you need three judges. The Torah repeats the word Elohim thrice to teach you that you need three judges. Again, that's only the opinion of Rav Oshia. Rav Yonasan Omer, Rishon Tchila Ne'amar, V'yein Darshan Tchilos. He says that the first Elohim is absolutely necessary in its context to tell you that the Balabais, the owner of the watch, takes the Shomer to din. He sues him and he subpoenas him in front of the court. So the name for the judge is Elohim. V'yein Darshan Tchilos. You can't use a word that's necessary in its context to as a drasha. You know, you want to say, well, one, two, three. That's not true, because the first one we need for Tchilos. Tchilos means for the beginning of the parasha, meaning for to tell you exactly what's going on here. So we're not, the Torah is not indicating how many judges are there. The Torah is just saying that you take your, the defendant in this case, you take your shomer and you bring him into the bezdin. Now here at this point, Rashi adds something which it doesn't say in the Gemara, but Rashi adds that chilos here, which refers to the first mention of Elohim, that teaches me the law of Mumchim. Now I was just calculating how many judges have to be on the court. Rashi says no, it goes beyond that. The Gemara is saying that the first Elohim is going to establish the quality of that judge. Do you follow? Not the quantity of how many Edom are sitting on the court, on the bench, but rather the quality of the, which judge can qualify. You know, he has the resume that allows him to judge the case. And the answer is the mumcha. Mumcha means he's a samuch. He has smicha that's in an unbroken chain from Moshe Rabbeinu. So now, Rabbi Yonasan is in a bind, because he doesn't have three Elohims. He's already dropped the first Elohim. That's going to teach me about the makeup of the Bezdin, that it requires mumchim. Elo, but rather, it says, Ad Ha Elohim Yadvod Vashnehem. So again, that was the second pasuk that Rav Oshia had quoted, because he had the first pasuk Elohim. But now that Rav Yonasan drops the first Elohim, then Ad Elohim Yavod Vashnehem Arei Kadecha, that becomes the first pasuk. And then the next pasuk is Asher Yashin Elohim, which was the third pasuk for Rav Oshia, Sarei Kanshnai. No, if that be the case, we're at a stone wall, we're at a brick wall, because all we know is two witnesses. We have to find a third Elohim, a third Elohim in order to teach us what? A third Elohim to teach us that we require three judges. So here, Rabbi Yonasan invokes another principle. What principle is that? The Ein Bezdin Shakul. The Torah would never, again, there doesn't seem to be a source for this, it's some sort of inherent, innate logic, the Torah would never accept an even number of judges on a court, because the decision of the court has to be a majority decision, and in the case of an even number, you might be left with a stalemate, correct? And again, keep in mind, that the structure and the makeup of the court has to be such that it allows itself under all circumstances to hand down a decision. If it's an even number, that's not really true, because you might get a majority view, because, right? Even if you had, let's say you had, for example, you had 20 judges on the court, so it could be that that 12 will vote chayev and 8 will vote potur zakai, and you may get a majority, but you can't guarantee me a majority in every single case. In an odd number, I guarantee that you can have a clear cut majority, even if it's only by one. And we all know that one could make the difference in forming a bezin. Okay, nobody got my intention there. Okay. So now it comes out that Mosif and Aleim Odecha, we have to add another judge to the two judges. Harekan Shlosha. And now we end up with three. So watch the difference between Rabbi Oshia on the one hand and Rabbi Yonasan on the other. Rabbi Oshia says the basic makeup of the Bezdin has to be three. Less than three is not a Bezdin. Whereas Rabbi Yonasan says two could be a Bezdin, but it's a Bezdin Shakul, and we're not going to accept a Bezdin Shakul. We need an odd number, therefore we have to add a third judge. But the third judge is only, in a sense, an addendum in order to guarantee that there will be a Bezdin She'eino Shakul. Now, what are the implications of this machlokas? First of all, the implication of this machlokas as far as drushas in general, because Rabbi Yonasan has a principle called Ein Darshin Tchilos, that whenever the Torah repeats itself, we need the first one for its pshuto shel mikra, for the simple meaning of the text, and we can't use that as part of the calculation of the superfluous words for the drusha. Whereas Rabbi Yirmi says, just calculate how many times the word appears. So that has tremendous repercussions for other sugyas and shas, about whether or not we darshim tchilos or not. For example, just to give you one example, how many times does the Torah tell us that you're not allowed to cook meat and milk? Three times, right? So how do you know three times? Ah, because it says the three times, but according to Rabbi Yonasan, you don't have the right to use all three for a drasha because you ain't darshan tchilos. So you really only have two times. The first time is not superfluous. So this whole discussion about, one is to teach you the Isur Bishul, and another is going to teach you the Isur Hanah, and the third one is going to teach you the Isur of Achila, and so forth and so on, that doesn't get off the ground, so, according to Rabbi Yonasan. Rav Yoshia is in a very is in a much more comfortable position as far as what we know universally to be the laws of drashas. But on another level, the repercussions of this machlokas are in terms of the status of a bezdin she'eino shakul. What's the deal in a case where there was a bezdin that issued a ruling and it was an even number of judges on the court? So let's say, for example, you had a court of 23 judges. So that's good. It's an odd number. But let's say they added another judge. They felt they needed one more judge on the case. Now you have a bezdin that's made up of 24 judges. That's already an even number. So what does it mean? It's a bezdin shakul. And we don't allow a bezdin shakul. Does that mean that their whole decision is completely invalid? Or should we say no? L'chatchila, we want a bezdin she'eino shakul, an odd number, but b'dieved, if the bezdin came to a majority conclusion and it was a bezdin shakul, we can accept that ruling. So it could very well be that according to Rav Oshia, if the bezdin is made up of two judges, the issue, the ruling that they issue is completely invalid, it's meaningless. Doesn't have a chal shem haros about the bezdin, but according to Rabbi Yonasan, it could very well be that although there were only two judges on the case, that's enough to form a bezdin because Elohim is only twice. You need a bezdin sheino shakul. Okay, if all cases are equal, we need a bezdin sheino shakul. But in this case, even if you had a third judge, there was a unanimous decision amongst the two judges, the third judge would still be a minority view, and nothing changes. So therefore, by the evidence, we can recognize, according to Rabbi Yonasan, the decision made by a bezdin sheino shakul. A bezdin shakul, I'm sorry. And that leads us to, to repeat what we said in the name of Rabbi Avo. Where was it? Let's go back for a second to the Beis Amid Beis. And there we had the statement of, I'm sorry, was it Shmuel? Let me just get the name straight here. Amar Shmuel, I'm sorry, on the top of Daf Gimel and Aleph, Amar Shmuel, Shnaim Shedanu, Dineim Din, El Shinikro Bezdin Chatzuf. So it means that Shmuel validates the ruling of an equal number of judges on the court. If it was a majority ruling, in this case it was a unanimous ruling of two judges, and that would very much reflect the shita here of Rabbi Yonah's son, because Rabbi Yonah's son is fundamentally agreeing that we can validate a bezdin of two judges of Elohim Elohim twice. Again, we have a problem if there's no unanimous decision, but in a unanimous decision, that should be fine. So the Gemara says, Nema, shall we assume that this machlokas, this controversy between Rabbi Yonah's son and Rabbi Yoshia is bedarshin tchilos kamifligi? Kamifligi means they're arguing about darshin tchilos. Says Rabbi Yonah, they want to know whether or not you can derive something from the first mention in the Torah, when that first mention is critical to give us a simple context. The Mar Sovar, according to Rabbi Yoshia, darshin tchilos. Even the first time it's mentioned in Dash, Mar Sovar ain't darshin tchilos. Rabbi Yonah's son holds that you cannot calculate the first time it's mentioned. And again, the Gemara is not excited about this because, as we said before, you know, this is going to have tremendous, you know, it's like a ripple effect across all of Shas and all drushes. What are we going to do with the first time that the Torah mentions it? We're not going to calculate it? So the Gemara therefore backtracks. Lo, the Kuli Alma ain't darshin tchilos. Okay, at this point, the Gemara is willing to say that even Rav Yoshe would agree that you don't darshin tchilos. Oh, so now we're stuck. So what is Rav Yoshe saying to Rav Yonah's son? Amulcha Rav Yoshe, what he's going to tell you is that there's a special reason why we could darshin the first pasuk Elohim in this particular parasha. Why? Because if you don't darshin the word Elohim, and the word Elohim, you're telling me, is not calculating how many judges you need, it's just telling you need mumchin. Is him kain, name a krah, the pasuk should have said, v'nikra balabayis ela shofet. Now the word shofet is a word that comes up in the Bible many, many times. It's the classic formulation of a judge in the Torah law, in the Torah language. It's called a shofet. We have a whole parasha called shoftim, right? A whole section in Tanakh called the Book of Shoftim. And why did the Torah go out of its way to mention Elohim instead of Shofet? So now Rav Oshia wants to measure the discrepancy, the increment between the difference between Shofet and Elohim. And the answer is the following. He says, now what I'm about to tell you is based on this Tosfos, Divrei Maschil En. But we're not going to go through the Tosfos inside because we don't have that much time. But what I'm going to try to do is give you a little bit of a highlight of this Tosfos. And he says the following. He says, Lo darshin tchilos mishum shalohim shemashma'o lashon srara v'rabonis milamdenu shetzarach mumchim. And he says that Rav Oshia holds that Shofet indicates Mumche. So that Tosfos understood that a Shofet means even a Hejot. He's not a Samuch. He doesn't have Smicha, Ish Mipi Ish, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Tosfos then says, no, that the Chiddush here of Rabbi Yoshia is that Rabbi Yoshia thinks that the word shofet means a mumche. So let's go back to the Gemara now. The Gemara says, the kuli alma ain't darshin tchilos. So that we don't usually, as a general rule, derive for the first time it mentions it in the parasha, because that we need lipshuto. But here is different. Why? Because the Torah could have said Shofet. No, you'll ask me, but maybe the Torah had to say Elohim in order to teach you that it's a mumche. No. That's what Tosfos points out here, that even the word Shofet would have indicated he's a mumche. So why, therefore, did the Torah change its language And instead of using the classic word, which would have been shofet, it switches it and substitutes for Elohim for shofet. My Elohim, Shema Mino, must be telling you some additional halacha, which I wouldn't know had it said shofet. If I would have had a shofet, I would have said that the Torah in the word shofet indicates that you need a mumche, but it's not telling you anything about the number of judges that you need, and therefore can't be calculated as the first of the three judges. But now that the Torah, instead of using the word shofet, it substitutes the word Elohim, instead of using a classic word for a judge, which is in Lashon Kodesh HaShofet, it says Elohim, the mashmos, the implication is that we're telling you something that we wouldn't have derived from shofet. Because again, from the word shofet, we'd only derive mumche, but we wouldn't know how many judges you need. Elohim is coming to tell you how many judges you need. So you have the first Elohim, and then again it says Elohim twice, and therefore you need three judges.
Why couldn't it, I mean, if it had used the word shoftim three times, it would have come to the same conclusion. So it's kind of like a roundabout way of trying to explain why it used...
Not really, because not, if it would have said shoftim three times, then we would only know two judges, because the first one is called tchila. And even Rav Yoshi agrees that ain't darshan tchilos. The only reason this is the exception is because I have a problem with the word. The Gemara analyzes that the Torah uses a word that's not in place, and therefore must be coming to teach me something new that I wouldn't have known. Had it said shofet over and over again, I would have said you need one shofet to teach you mumchim, and two shoftim to teach you that you need two judges. But from the fact that Torah switched the classic word shofet for the word Elohim, it must be something telling me extra beyond what I would have derived from shofet. Not only do I need a mumchim, but I need a judge as the first of a calculation of how many judges I need on the court, and now we have the other two times, so I need three. Rabbi Yonasan, Lishna the Alma Nokit. Rabbi Yonasan says, don't ask a kasha why it says Elohim instead of Shofet. That's not a valid kasha. That wouldn't give you a justified drasha and teach you that you need three judges. Lishna the Alma Nokit. This is the way people speak. This is Rabosa, we are all familiar with the principle of Dibra Torah Kaloshim Bnei Adam. The Torah uses the language of man. Kida Amri Inshi. Now the Gemara switches into Aramaic here because the Gemara wants to tell you in the vernacular how do we speak. You know, there's certain idiomatic phrases that are common. What are they called? Those kind of adages? What are they called? What's the word for, you know, different kinds of phrases that
we... Idiomatic.
Idiomatic, right. It's an idiomatic phrase in Aramaic, and it's very common in Babel. And what do they say? Man de islay dina, if anyone has a judgment, is likarev legabi dayana. He should take it to a mumcha. Dayana means an expert mumcha. So the word Elohim is the biblical word for dayana, which means an expert judge in Aramaic. So Elohim means a dayan mumcha. So in other words, since the language of Elohim is used in the common parlance, therefore you cannot raise a question, why did the Torah use the word Elohim instead of shofet? This is part of the language that we use. So the Gemara now asked Rav Oshia. Actually, Rav Oshia needs, right, three, you know, repetition of Elohim three times in order to derive the requirement of three judges. So the Gemara says, Lesle Bezdin Note. In other words, Note comes from the word Achiravim Le Hatos, meaning we need a majority in order to determine the law. Doesn't he realize that you need a Bezdin which could have a majority to it? And that can't apply if you have an even number. Let's say you have four judges or six judges, whatever the number might be. That would not be a Bezdin Note. It doesn't lend itself to a majority rule. So is it possible that Rav Oshia would validate a Bezdin that's made up of an even number, which is called a Bezdin Note? I'm sorry, Lesle Bezdin Note. would it be possible that Rav Oshia doesn't require Bezdin that has the possibility of a majority? Vasanya Rabbi Eliezer Bino Shel Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Ah, shucks. I was hoping it would be Rabbi Eliezer Bino Shel Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That would be more appropriate for today's date. Okay. You know, somebody said yesterday we were davening Ma'ariv, and the question. So I asked who has a chiyuv. So Daniel Pfeffer says, well, the only one who has a chiyuv is Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He has to say Kaddish for his father. He has Yartzai. Anyway, so Rabbi Eliezer Beno Shel Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer Ma Talmud Lomar. What does it mean in the pasuk in Tayonim? It says Lintos Akre Rabim Lahatos. It's a Torah Omer. Say Lucha Bezdin Nota. The Torah is saying that not only do you rely on a majority in terms of counting the votes, but you need a bezin that lends itself to a majority. And that's called a bezin nota. Nota means there's an odd number, and it can therefore give you a majority rule. So we see that it's clear from the Brisa itself, and we don't know that Rav Yoshia would disagree with this Brisa, that you need a bezin nota, which means you have to have an odd number so you'll have a majority. And if that be the case, then how does Rabbi Yoshia establish that you need a third judge for the sake of three judges? No, you need a third judge in order to make sure that you have a Beis Din Nota. So the Gemara answers, Savar la ki Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yoshia accepted the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Now what's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? So with this we'll conclude. And we're going to have a long discussion about this, Rabbi Yehuda, but let's just get his shita on the table. The Omar, he's of the opinion that the highest court in the land, which is called Sanhedrin Agdola, was made up of only 70 judges. You remember he said that Moshe Rabbeinu gathered together 70 judges. Moshe himself was not part of the Beis Din. And therefore the Beis Din was made up of 70. Now 70 is an even number that divides to 35, which means that you don't need a Beis Din Nota. So the fundamental issue that we're addressing now today, Rav Osai, and we'll pick this up tomorrow, tomorrow meaning Sunday, is whether or not the Beis Din has to be guaranteed a majority. And that would require an odd number of judges. Rabbi Yehuda seems to assume that there is no such requirement. He drops the ball on the requirement of Beis Din Nota that's an odd number. He doesn't require an odd number. He himself says that the Sanhedrin, the highest court in the land that has tremendous decision-making authority powers, is made up of an even number of judges, of 70 judges. This nan, and now the Gemara quotes our Mishnah, Sanhedrin, Gedola, Isa Shel Shivim V'Echad. That's according to Tanakhama, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shivim. So Rabbi Yehuda himself accepts a Bezin She'eno Nota, what we would call a Bezin Shakul. It's 70, it doesn't lend itself, well, it could have a majority, but it might not have a majority if it's split down the middle. And if we attach Rabbi Yoshia to Rabbi Yehuda, then Rabbi Yoshia is not going to add the third judge to the court that's made up of two judges simply to make sure that it's a Beis Din Nota, but rather because it says Elohim three times, and that teaches me that the basic, essential definition of a Beis Din is that it's comprised of three judges. It has nothing to do with this addition of a third judge just to make sure that it's a Beis Din Nota. So we'll lean at it tomorrow, as I say tomorrow, I mean Sunday, we'll pick it up here, make a note that we're up to the Gemara here, we're almost at the end of the first sugya of Gimel Amid Beis, and I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Shabbos, and Parshas Bechukosai, and Rashi says the Parsha Bechukosai is for us, because it means you amelus in Torah, that we have to have an amelus in Torah, and yiratzon with that amelus in Torah, the Arizal says that the more you sweat in Torah, the more you'll have a zchus in olam haba, and we'll be able to come up in front of the Beis Din Shalmala with tremendous, tremendous zechuyot. Kein yiratzon, amen.